Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And today, our guest, Sammy. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to finally have you on. We've been chatting for a little bit, and so I'm anxious to hear your journey and then also to kind of talk about what you're doing in the Lyme community and the things that you're offering to give back to this Lyme community that we desperately all know needs so much help, right? So I welcome you to the show, Sammy. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tanya. I'm very happy to be here, and I'm really excited because May is Lyme Disease Awareness Month, and I think there's no better time for us to be together and talking about this serious epidemic than right now.
I can absolutely agree with that. Although we need to talk about it 12 months out of the year, right? They only give us month. We'll take it. We'll take May for it for sure.
I talk about it 365.
Exactly, right? Like that's kind of what we eat, breathe, sleep, all Lyme disease, right? But it's for a good cause for sure. So, well, gosh, so do you know where we need to start? Like, do you remember getting bit? How far back do we need to go?
Yeah. So my name's Sammy Kirschbaum and I'm from central Wisconsin. And I believe that I was bit in central Wisconsin in either Wausau or Stevens Point. And the memory when I first got ill was when I was 16 years old. I actually was just turning 16. I was on bed rest for my birthday. But I caught mono, which is very similar to a lot of people's stories. They get Epstein-Barr virus and then they find that their health's declining. I had this very rare case of mono where when I ended up in the ER, I was hospitalized and I tested positive for mono and the doctor was like, well, this is interesting. You're the first patient that I've ever seen that not only has the enlarged spleen, but your liver is also enlarged. So I was on bed rest for 4 months. I didn't weigh anything. I looked like a skeleton, had no muscle. I didn't really eat. And then every single year after that, more symptoms kept piling on all the way for the next 10 years.
Okay. So initially it was, you got sick. They tell you have mono, you're in the hospital, you're on bed rest. And that kind of started your whole journey. Hindsight, looking back on it now, right? Like, cause a lot of times we don't know until, you know, we get years down the road. We're like, hey, you know, now looking back on it. Okay. And so you were 16 at the time. Okay. And so then over the next how many years, how did things progress? What types of symptoms did you have over these next years? And what types of answers were you getting from doctors, assuming you went to many?
Yes. So after I got off of bed rest, I had to go back to school and fall started. I couldn't do sports. My spleen was still large, so I missed out on a lot that year. As my friends kept kind of progressing, it was sad because some of my social life took a toll. All of a sudden, I had migraines, neck pain, and I had this throbbing pain in my knees, joint pain, pretty much. And I was told, okay, well, she needs to be in physical therapy, you know, 3 times a week. Well, finances were tight growing up, going to the doctor's difficult, takes time, takes money. So I wasn't able, I didn't do physical therapy 3 times a week, but I was very active. I still was on the dance team. I was very involved with musical theater. I did so many musicals and singing was a huge thing that made me happy. Well, as the years go on and I'm leaving high school, all of a sudden anxiety's there that I've never had in my entire life. I would go on stage and sing in front of 800 people. And then all of a sudden I would be super anxious behind the curtain, like, oh no, the show's about to start, even though I've done it multiple times. And it wasn't just normal nerves, it was heavy anxiety. Then I go through college, very involved in college, got great grades. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, so I always push myself super hard.
You know, it's really sad because I am a little bit of an OCD perfectionist as well. And it's hard when you have Lyme. Like that's a big balancing act that we need to do because we don't want to let go of the power to let anybody help us because they just might not do it right, right? Like, right. And then we stress and we get anxiety. So yeah, I don't know why like us perfectionists are the ones that that get this disease. Not a good combo.
Yeah, we're always running ourselves into the ground and not listening to our body. And then I feel like for everyone, what happens is our body ends up telling us because we're not listening and it screams. So all through college, like I just had to nap excessively all the time. I also would get sick all the time. You know where someone might get a cold for a week or two? I would be sick for 6 to 8 weeks with the same infection. And it'd be a cold, and then it was a sinus infection, and I was living in toxic mold, and I also grew up in mold. So fast forward, I had a surgery in 2020, the day before the pandemic was announced in the United States.
Okay.
Yeah. So I wake up from surgery. The nurse comes in, she says, "You're so lucky." And I'm sitting there in massive pain, which I had this surgery to try to reduce some symptoms in my neck stiffness and my back pain. And she says, "Well, you're so lucky because we just canceled all surgeries. I don't even know when we're going to be opening again." And I was like, "Oh gosh." So I was working child protection services at the time.
Let me stop you right there. So the surgery you had was related to pain that you had been dealing with?
It was.
Okay. And did that help at all?
It completely tanked my health down okay. to nothing.
Yep, just the trauma on your body of the surgery and probably the anesthesia and all of that. Yes, okay. So we wake up, the world shuts down, and Sammy shuts down all at the same yes. time. Okay.
You couldn't have said it better.
Okay.
So Sammy shut down, world shut down. I was on like medical leave from work. But I didn't go back. The pandemic was going on. Work was also stressful. What child protection service job isn't stressful? And then I'm also in grad school. So I'm on bed rest, still trying to heal. Also watching that all of my symptoms are exacerbated. I have new symptoms popping up and all my current ones are extremely worse. So I go into the doctor and I have like 54 symptoms. And I go in there just like circling the top five that I would just like some help on. And she looks at me like I'm crazy. Fast forward, she tells me it's probably just depression. I think a lot of us hear that. I still could, you know, easily cry when I think about that memory. I'll never forget that. Being a student who's on her way to become a mental health therapist and then to have a doctor totally dismiss all my symptoms, stung.
And then use the term depression. Yeah.
Yeah. It's completely blamed on mental health. So I asked for a rheumatology referral and she said she couldn't give me one because there was nothing to, you know, there's nothing showing up to even refer me. So I asked her to do some testing. She told me, don't expect anything to come back. And my Lyme disease test came back positive.
From a regular primary doctor?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't like to use the word lucky when we're talking about Lyme disease because no part of it's luck. But, you know, that's very uncommon for these basic labs from traditional doctors to come back positive.
Absolutely.
Okay. So now you get this positive Lyme. So first of all, did you know anything about Lyme? Were you familiar with it at all? And then I'm curious of how your doctor responded to that.
So when I saw the test, I had a panic attack. I was on my way to PT. I was like going every day to PT, OT this whole summer because my deductible was met from the surgery. And
okay.
I opened the test result before they called me. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I start looking it up and I'm like, oh crap. But I also had this relief that night of, wow. This all makes sense. I knew something was wrong. I've been sick for over 10 years. I'm sicker than everyone, like my average friends, you know, and family, like always saw something was wrong with me. Well, migraines, joint pain, nerve pain, neck stiffness, my knee. Okay, cool. This makes sense. And I just cried when I got home that day to my partner at the time. I was like, wow, I have an answer. And I did test positive for 4 bands. And what I didn't know is that I didn't know about chronic Lyme disease. I didn't know how hard it is to treat. But I also knew that growing up, all three of my dogs at my dad's house had Lyme disease. And I had a dog that would be unable to walk sometimes because of this disease.
Wow. You know, that's funny that you mention your dog having Lyme, because like you, when I finally got a diagnosis, like I just felt so heard and like somebody acknowledged that what I was saying was not a lie. But that was the first thing that popped into my head was, wait a minute, Lyme disease, isn't this what dogs get? Like that's the only thing I knew about it. And like you, I was super, super excited. And still, until I kind of started Googling it, and I'm like, ooh, maybe I want anything but Lyme disease, right? Like not super excited now. But wow, yeah. So, okay. So what did your doctor think? I mean, because now she can't deny it, right? Or he can't deny it because it's on the test.
Yeah. And then funny thing, I start taking the antibiotics and they call me back during my, I think they gave me 28 days. They said, you can stop taking the medication. You don't have Lyme disease. I said,
okay.
What?
And how? And
positive.
Yeah. Was this like days or weeks after?
They said because I only had 4 bands on that Western blot, second confirmation test, that I needed 5. And so I did not have Lyme disease. Although, as you know,
this is all the symptoms point to it, you know, because a lot of people nowadays, they'll even just get, you know, a clinical diagnosis because the testing is so bad. So you have this test, it's positive, but it's not CDC positive, which is, you know, nothing unheard of. Most of us aren't CDC positive. And so now they're telling you, oh, stop the antibiotics. It's false alarm. You don't have Lyme disease.
Yeah. I did not stop taking antibiotics. I went through the whole 28 days. I will never forget when I talked with the nurse before they called me to take back the diagnosis that I felt I finally was being seen from. I asked her, I said, I don't think this is new. I just had surgery. I've been at home. I haven't been outside at all. I don't think this infection is new. I know that this is really old. So what do I do if I still have symptoms when I finish this round of antibiotics? She goes, well, unfortunately, you know, that happens to a lot of people, and it's called post-treatment Lyme disease, and there's nothing we can do, and you will just have some symptoms the rest of your life. And I refused to accept that future for myself.
Good for you. And that is where advocating for ourselves comes into play, right? Like, we have to. If we want to get well, we have to continue to fight to get a diagnosis. And then we have to figure out how to treat and find the right doctors that are going to believe us and not let us walk away thinking we're going to be sick forever, because that is simply not the case. It is not easy. It is not a one size fits all, but I truly believe everybody can get completely well from Lyme disease, 100%. Well, good for you. So then I hope you fired your doctor at this point.
I never saw her again. I thought so many times about writing a letter. To this day, I have not done that. My grandma's so sweet. She has her whole church praying for me. Every day, every Sunday for the past 3 years in a row, she gets the whole church to pray for me. And she called me once, and my grandma goes, Sammy, and my grandma's the sweetest. She goes, is there any way you can sue this doctor for telling you that it was depression? And I said, oh, grandma, that would be a hassle, but I appreciate you wanting me to fight for justice.
Right, right. Well, tell your grandma I could probably give her the answer for that. So
okay.
I hired an attorney because my doctor, you know, saw the bullseye rash. He knew it was Lyme because he said, do you feel weird? Do you have the flu or anything? I'm like, no, I just got this spider bite on my ankle, like, and it hurts. Never once mentioned a tick bite or Lyme, but he knew. Because he said, if in the next, you know, week or two you get sick or the flu, you call me right away. And I thought, well, that's really random to say, but okay, whatever. You know, and it wasn't for 4 years later that I started getting sick. And so just had he mentioned a tick or a Lyme when I was trying to investigate, looking for answers, like that could have, you know, rang in my head. Hey, you know what? Years ago I got bit by a tick, but I didn't know because he didn't say anything. Oh, I was all for it. I reached out to several attorneys and I was like, look, this is what happened. Nope, tell grandma. We just don't have a leg to stand on. Sadly.
I love that you brought that up, Tanya, because the fact that I also, like, as a child was vulnerable to Lyme disease and then we're in an epidemic area. The epidemic obviously is everywhere. We can acknowledge that. However, central Wisconsin, it is so prevalent. Like, I think we're in the top five states now.
Yes, you are definitely, you know, we – I tell the listeners all the time, I'm like, okay, so like Lyme, it goes everywhere. It crosses all the state lines. There's, you know, it doesn't hide from anywhere. But yes, it's truly an epidemic or pandemic or whatever you want to call it. But there are absolutely states and locations that have them more than others, right? And obviously in Wisconsin is not a good place for ticks.
No, and I just wish someone would have ran a test. I mean, just once, one test, you know, could have changed the trajectory of our treatment of our lives. So it's hard to think back at that, but I know we also need to be looking forward because we can't go backwards.
Right, right. And I believe that, you know, our paths are kind of laid for us. I think that we go through the things that we go through for a reason. And, you know, it kind of lays out and I tell people all the time that going through Lyme disease changes you as a person, period. I am not going to say it doesn't because it does, whether you want it to or not. But it absolutely doesn't have to be in a bad way. Not at all. It can be an amazing way. You know, some people, you know, get closer to God, or some people just totally changes their mindset, their attitude in this world. Some people's careers totally do a 180 and they do something along the lines that are going to, you know, is going to help in the Lyme community. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, I don't think one person has ever said that the end result of my Lyme disease ruined my life. Once we get well and we're on the other side, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
I second that. Even thinking about all the things I've changed after the diagnosis came and I did the research and I started seeing all the doctors, I lost 75 pounds. I completely went gluten-free, dairy-free, anti-inflammatory. I lost all that weight within, I think it was about 6 months. It's pretty fast.
Wow.
I wasn't eating healthy. I moved out of mold. I, like you said, 180 on your career. I've done that. And now I have a population, the Lyme population, the mold population, helping those people. There's nothing that fills my heart more because I know how much they need it. And I'm a social worker at heart that cares about social justice issues. There are huge justice issues within the Lyme community.
Yep. That's the only reason I do this podcast. Is because I just want those listeners to hear that somebody else is going through what they're going through. And, you know, let's lay it out on the line, all the horrible bad of it, the pains and the misery, but then just know that you're better and you beat it and you got better, you know? So it's just truly just episodes of hope and inspiration that, yes, it's real. Yes, you have it. No, it's not the end of the world. And you absolutely can get better because listen to all of these guests sharing their story that they've beat it. So that's what it's all about, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So where are we at? We got off track a little bit.
That's okay.
Yes,
I fired the doctor.
You fired the doctor. I love it. I love those words. who was that? I think it actually wasn't it Donald Trump. Didn't he have a show or something that says you're fired? Do you know what show I'm talking about?
You're right. Is that the Christmas movie?
No, I think it was like kind of like a game show of some sort.
Oh.
But it was like, I don't know. I never watched it. I just remember hearing those words, and he said, "You're fired." Just so you fired your doctor.
In the Lyme community, it's more like Oprah, because it's like, "You're fired. You're fired."
So you fired your doctor, and then what did you do? Where did you go? How did you know where to go?
So I saw all the specialists. I saw the hematologist, the cardiologist, the rheumatologist, the endocrinologist, the gastroenterologist. I learned all these big words and how to pronounce them. I went through all the tests, all the things, colonoscopies at 22 years old. I saw a Lyme doctor, but here's the thing. After I waited 4 or 5 months to get in to see him, you know, he wanted to start me on the antibiotics and all that. And you know, Tanya, there are so many different treatments out there. And regarding the different treatments, it really does help different people in different ways. Some work really well for some people and they don't for others. So I don't beg on any treatments. We're all trying to find health. And I just want people to feel hope in that journey. But personally, I was at a time feeling really hopeless and in desperate need of help. And I wanted to hear from people. I'm a researcher at heart. So I wanted to know, who's better and what did you do? So I started reaching out, private messages, talked with hundreds of people, herbal protocols, long-term antibiotics, IV therapies. To be honest, most people were telling me they weren't better. 3 years, 7 years of treatment. Moms telling me heartbreaking stories on how they can't care for their kids, their family's falling apart, they can't work. And I was terrified at this point, thinking, well, you know, with my perfectionist tendencies, I did everything. I did all the community things that brought me joy and helping society. I got the perfect grades in college, and then I just finished my master's program, ready to take off, and then my body shut down. But it was an awakening to change some things, and then also I got to use all these wonderful skills I gained in my social work program, my voice, raising my voice, caring about these issues, and advocacy, which helped me along this whole journey. So when I kept hearing that people weren't better, I kept looking for different treatments. Came across bee venom therapy, all sorts of things. And eventually I came across the German treatment. I call it the German treatment. The treatment I chose to go forward with was at Clinic St. George in the city of Bad Aibling in southern Bavaria. And they provide whole body hyperthermia as the main tool to eradicate Lyme disease, along with augmented antibiotics. And then they do a whole bunch of rehabilitation supporting therapies while you're there as well.
Awesome. So I also did full body hypothermia, and that was one of the, I mean, I did many, many things, but that was what I really feel played a huge role in my healing journey. And not many people do this. It's certainly not an easy or a fun thing to go down. So I'm very interested in hearing your journey about it, since I too lived it myself, because I don't get to talk to many people that do this type of treatment. So you literally just moved to Germany for a little bit for this treatment. Was that the only place you could find it?
So I heard there's a couple options in the U.S. that do hyperthermia, but it's not whole body, including the head. And I know, and you know, that Lyme goes through the blood-brain barrier into the head, neuroinflammation, and antibiotics can't get there. So I didn't trust these other ones. I just felt like, I know I have neurological Lyme disease. At my worst, I was suffering with short-term memory. Like, it was bad.
Yeah.
It was so scary. And I was like, well, I'm going to try this. And I got the finances together, not easily, but grants, fundraisers, external support. And luckily I was able to go to Germany and try this treatment. And I was inpatient for 5 weeks. This hospital gives you different options. You can stay for the 2 weeks just for the Lyme disease. You can stay 3 to 4 weeks for co-infection treatments. And I even stayed a fifth week and I did a live bacteria transfer, which helps your digestive system.
Oh, I'm anxious to hear. Okay. So how did it go? So you're there for 5 weeks. Give us the rundown. Like, week one, was it like a detox week? Was it, and if you don't remember details, not a big deal at all. Just throw out random things. It doesn't have to be in any particular order.
So this was during the pandemic when I went.
Oh,
shut down. So I had to have permission to get in the country. And I had a medical necessity note. They said that I needed to come into their country to get life-saving treatment. And just having that validation on paper, my heart still feels a lot for that. Huge, huge, great gratitude for them. So I got there, and what they do for the first 5 days while they're prepping you is a whole bunch of IVs, prepping your body for the whole body hypothermia. And of course they have a supplement regimen. They have an oral care regimen as well, because they talk about how bacteria can be in the gums and in the mouth. So they're really trying to systemically take care of the bacteria. And then I arrived on a Sunday. They prepped me all week. You have a colon cleanse the day before. You got some food restrictions. I believe that you have some food restrictions, like you can't eat 24 hours before, but then you have some food restrictions 3 days before the procedure as well.
Okay.
And then I had my whole body hypothermia the first time on a Friday morning, and I met a wonderful friend named Tara, who was there from Florida as well. And we were both going in the first day. And I remember the nurse, she was looking at me. I was on the table. She's like, "I'll put the catheter in after you fall asleep." I was like, "Thank you, please." She starts running the IVs, and I'm laying there, and she goes, "Are you feeling okay? Are you nervous?" And I said, "No, I am excited because today I get to kill Lyme disease in my body."
Oh, I love that answer.
Thank you. I'll never forget that, because she looked at me like shocked, like she hasn't heard that in those exact words before. And she took really good care of me, and she put me to sleep. And when I woke up, I was very, very sick, Tanya.
I bet. How long were you asleep for? See, I didn't go to sleep, so this is very different for me. Yeah. So how long were you asleep?
So their procedures at Clinic St. George are 6 hours long. And you do them two weeks in a row. It's 2 hours of raising your body temperature up to the temperature that they need, which for me was 107.8, my whole body. They hold it there for 2 hours. And then the last 2 hours is bringing your body back down in temperature before they wake you up.
Gosh, I kind of wished I was asleep through that. It was the most miserable, miserable thing ever. And I did it 5 days a week for several weeks.
Did you go to Mexico?
I did not. It was in a clinic in Reno, Nevada.
Okay.
And it was, they give you the shot and you wait. Sometimes it's 30 minutes. Sometimes it's 2 hours. It kicks in. And my temperature usually went up to 106, 107. And then when that happened, I would ice pack, Advil, bathtub, like anything I can do to bring it down, right? Because we can't let it get much higher than that. And then, yes, you literally feel like you kind of just wish somebody just would have killed you, right? Like it was so the time going through it, like you're shaking in convulsions. And I remember, you know, I'd have to have something in my mouth to bite on so I didn't bite my tongue. And like any stubbed toe that you ever had your whole life, that pain just comes out tenfold when your body temperature is raised like that. So I'm kind of liking this Germany place. Put me to sleep.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like, wow, I'm happy I was asleep. I'm so sorry, but I'm so happy you're feeling better today.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Okay, so then you wake up, and so your body's probably kind of, I guess, coming down from, you probably felt like you had been ran over by a truck or something, is my guess.
Absolutely. So they're running so many fluids through you. Mm-hmm. So I've never seen how do I explain it? I basically was swelled. I felt like an Oompa Loompa, and I called myself that. I even looked a little orange, but I was also very high on my beta carotene at that time because your girl was eating so many carrots. So I woke up, I was puffy, like, fingers were so big. My face, everything was puffy. Immediately upon waking up, I vomited.
Oh.
The first time I opened my eyes, I just went, you know, I got sick. And I realized what had happened and where I was. Like, oh, I just woke up from my procedure. Okay. I pressed the red button and I saw them open the door and run in to check on me because you're in the ICU for at least 24 hours after this procedure so they can keep eyes on you. And as soon as I saw him coming in, I knew I was safe. And I just fell back asleep. I don't know. I know that they cleaned up the puke for me. And
okay.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Bless them, right?
They roll you back to your room or have you walk yourself back to your room within the next, after that 24 hours ends. But I was out until Monday. I didn't eat. I felt so sick and I just slept a lot.
Wow. But it makes sense. Like, you know, just a random person that, you know, gets the flu or a cold and they have a fever. Like a fever just kind of wipes you out, right? Like it makes your body ache and when you're done with it, it just still feels like you need a few extra days after that fever because it just kind of wears on you. So yeah, by inducing this really high fever, which is much higher than, you know, most of us get a fever, it's like 102 at home, right? And we think that, you know, we're practically on our deathbed because we have this fever and we're so sick. And, you know, so doing it intentionally is certainly different. But it makes sense that you're just kind of done and wiped out. So you slept, okay? So the procedure was on a Friday and you literally slept till Monday, okay? Besides waking up and throwing up,
yeah.
You went back to sleep. Okay, so now we're on to Monday. So you wake up and how are you feeling?
So by like Sunday evening, I'm more awake, still tired. But I know that my treatments start again Monday morning. So I went through all the same thing the following week, prepping my body, having IVs over the weekend. And then there we go, whole body thermia, hyperthermia again the following Friday. And when people ask me about, you know, how was your experience there? Of course, it was a complete different culture. And I literally had treatments sometimes early as 8 a.m. A lot of them were more like 9:30, 10, and they would run anywhere to 2 in the afternoon to sometimes 4:30. And there's three different floors that you go just back and forth for all these different treatments, whether that's ozone, magnetic field therapy. We did laser IV therapy as well. There was so many. I can't remember all of them.
So much, yeah. So did you do the, like the blood ozone? Was that one of your things? Yeah.
I did do that as well.
Yeah, that was. How did you feel after blood ozone? Did you have like kind of a burst of energy or were you really tired?
When I think back to it, I felt like at the hospital, I did have a lot more energy than I usually do. And when I left, I felt just really good. So other than the whole body hyperthermia, I think most of the therapies were relaxing and I just was filled with so much optimism that I was going to heal. I don't remember for sure if the ozone gave me the energy.
Okay. Because I know ozone is, you know, a pretty big topic nowadays in the Lyme community because I think it does some amazing things. You know, you've got the blood ozone, you've got the sauna ozone, you've got like so many options to do ozone. And I remember when I did my blood ozone, like I was wiped out. We did that. It was, you know, like, I don't know, 2-3-4 hour procedure. When it was done, I was just, I felt like I'd been hit by a truck. But yet my patients and my new friends that I met at the clinic, they're like, I want to go shopping. I want to go out to eat. Like they had this burst of energy and everybody did but me. I was like the oddball out because they're like, oh, I can't wait to do my ozone again. I'm like, oh, I'm dreading it. You know? So I just was curious at how you felt with it. So
you were like, this isn't my espresso shot.
Right. Okay. So what types of... So let's keep going there. So then that Friday you did it again. So how many altogether hyperthermias did you do while you were in treatment?
I did two.
Two total.
The second time for me and what they say for most people is much easier because the first one's the real whoa. Second one's better. And then they also do a plasma apheresis afterwards, which is it's the following week. It's a 6-hour procedure. They had to put a central line. I still have the scar on my chest.
So like a port?
Yeah.
Like an IV port? Okay.
Yeah. They do that for the plasmapheresis specifically, and that is how they say that they're able to cleanse your body from the deadline bacteria with all the toxins after whole body hypothermia kills it.
Okay. And so they just ran antibiotics through you?
They don't run antibiotics for the plasmapheresis, but they do separate like out the plasma. And then they also told me that they could help with mold. So they had like a mold filter on there that is supposed to help me.
Okay.
One thing I do want to point out is that I do believe they're very, very educated on Lyme disease. And I see that. And I'm happy that they have co-infection treatments and they're always still working to add more things. But I don't think they're super educated on mycotoxins and mold. So I have had to do my own mold journey still when I got home.
Okay.
It was not helpful there.
That, and thank you for sharing that, because that's a good good tip for the listeners. Anybody that may be interested in going to the clinic, because definitely I believe that if somebody is going through this journey and they've done, you know, it's like peeling an onion. There's so many levels and layers to this illness, and it's not just Lyme. It's co-infections. It's parasites. It's candida. It's mold, you know, and there are a handful of doctors I feel are very, very good in what they do, but they don't ever address mold or parasites, which to me is kind of mind-blowing, but that's okay. You know, as long as we know, as long as the listeners know, like those are two things that you just need to address. So you know that they didn't do that. Good for you for figuring that out and that you needed to treat for mold. So did you have a test done in the States?
Was this for mold or for Lyme disease?
For mold.
After my treatment?
For mold.
Yes, I have my own functional medicine, integrative medicine doctor I've been working with for 2 years now, and she's in Wisconsin. Her name's Catherine Bayless, and she helps me with my mold, and she uses real-time laboratories.
Awesome. Okay.
I've also done the Great Plain in the past as well.
Okay, good to know. We like to know these testing places because they're not all treated equally, right? We know this.
Absolutely. That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you leave the clinic, you're Lyme free, co-infection free. And now you're battling, and you still are battling the mold part.
I am.
What does your mold protocol look like?
So a lot of the journey for me with mold has been like mast cell activation syndrome, calming my immune system, getting me to a stable enough place to start mold treatment. I've had such a hard time with constipation and binders and getting it out of my body. And finally, I've been in a better place. I moved to Arizona, like I mentioned in the beginning, for my health, to get out of water damaged buildings that are so common where I'm from. Now I'm here, I have to worry about AC units, right? Because they're running almost year round. There's a lot of mold in AC units.
Yeah, I was just going to say I had somebody on a prior podcast that I don't want to misquote, but it was something like Arizona is the worst place to live for mold. And it makes sense because we all run, you know, they all run their AC like 24/7 in Arizona pretty much, right? So that kind of would make sense.
I've been here for my first winter, and we've definitely had it off more often during the winter, but it still has definitely been on probably at least some point during the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
So now I'm doing antifungals on top of binders, and I am so happy to report that just this past couple weeks, I retook my real-time laboratory test, and for the first time, my scores, my mycotoxin levels were finally decreasing.
Yay. That's awesome. So overall, so you leave the clinic Lyme free, but you have mold. So how did you feel when you left the clinic? And then how do you feel now? So like the differences between, you know, being Lyme free, but having mold, and then kind of going through the process of treating your mold to how you feel now.
So I think that's a great question because people want to know statistics too, right? So when I went to Germany, I had 54 symptoms.
Wow.
When I got home, I had about 8.
Yay. Okay, that's big. That's big.
That's huge, yeah. I as soon as I got back, I studied a lot of my cohort from grad school took their national social work exam when we graduated in May. Well, I went pretty much right to Germany, so I left in July. Got back a day before September started, and then I started studying because my cognitive function was finally there that I was able to study for this exam. I passed that exam, and then I started training in brain spotting, which we'll get to later. But the only thing that stunted my recovery was I got COVID for the first time 2.5 months after my treatment. But something that I think is quite remarkable to share is I wasn't expecting this, but I went to a music festival when I left the hospital. I went 3 days in a row to a music festival.
5 weeks after treatment. Or this after is- doing treatment for 5 weeks. You just yes. leave there and go to a music festival.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's probably all we need to know. So you felt pretty amazing, right?
I will share, Tanya. I was the only sober person at that festival. And it was funny because everyone was like, "Why? Do you want a drink? Do you want a drink?" And I was like, absolutely not. Like, no. And the funniest thing was I had all these pills, like $1,000, maybe $2,000 worth of pills when I left my clinic. When I left the treatment, they send you with all these pills to take home. Uh-huh. I needed to stay on my regimen, and I had like a whole backpack full of all these pills. And I don't know who would have let me in the festival, but they were all my supplements from the hospital. And I just drank water and I just enjoyed the music. And I'll never forget, it was in Salzburg, Austria. And I was just up on someone's shoulders and I was like, wow, I'm going to get my life back. Like, this is my new life celebration.
Oh, you just gave me goosebumps. I love that. I love that. I love that so much. So yes, you are here. You are. You know, treatment's not easy. It can be expensive. It can be tough, you know, maneuvering which route you want to go because there are so many options out there. But it can be done. And your proof. You just told us that, right? Like, here you are on the shoulders after this intense 5-week treatment program. And granted, I'm glad you weren't drinking alcohol. We had to stay on our water and strict regimen of all of our pills that we had to take, right?
Yes.
Well, that is amazing. That is amazing. And it sounds like you're going to beat this whole mold thing as well. Your numbers are down. And how do you feel today? What are maybe some of your symptoms that you're still battling due to the mold?
Due to the mold, I still definitely have some hormonal imbalances that I'm working on. I got off birth control as soon as I got the Lyme diagnosis to try to like see, you know, where's my body at baseline.
Yeah.
Still working on some hormonal stuff. I feel like the brain fog, I used to have it every day, all day. And I'd look at people and they'd be like, Sammy, we already talked about this. And that would just break my heart hearing that. And at one point I just accepted, yeah, this is what's happening. And I believe these people. They wouldn't tell me that we talked about this if we didn't. But now my brain fog only is present around my menstrual cycle, which is why I also think there's some hormonal things going on.
Makes
it's hard
sense.
To put my finger on it, but I still have some gut issues I'm taking care of. Yeast infections because of the candida, like it's so overgrown that yeast infections come on easily. And then also the sinuses, some sinal issues. I also have, I think this is interesting with the Lyme community, but we are like canines when it comes to smelling. I can smell mold a mile away. If you want me to sniff out mold or like go into your house, I can immediately tell you if there's fungus in there.
And that is so crazy because And most people that have Lyme have mold. Like more people do than don't. And I've never dealt with mold. And so I don't know, but I can tell you that I know there are some people that are so sensitive. If they walked into a house and there was something moldy in that person's refrigerator, like they know. they know that there's mold in this house and they're like, give me. And it's just, it just still blows my mind that people are that sensitive to it. So that I'm extra grateful that I never did have to deal with mold. Thank goodness, because it's not a fun one to get rid of. So, well, that's amazing. You are, you know, all those symptoms, you know, minus all but eight, like you're doing amazing. I'm so excited. You're young and you're ready to get your life going and you're ready for it. I know you are. I feel it. So tell us, because this is one of my favorite parts, is to hear what people are doing after they beat Lyme. And I love what you're doing. So you're a licensed mental health therapist, which is huge for the Lyme community, because a lot of it is, you know, we deal with a lot of mental health issues. And I say it over and over, these people need to deal with the emotional side of Lyme and what they went through. It's one of the layers we have to peel back. And I think if you don't, I think you either don't get all the way well or you're going to relapse and get sick again. So we need your profession in our little world. So where can people find you? What's your website? What are the things that you offer?
Yeah, so I will also point out that although I do have a mental health background and I am certified in a couple different states, I'm specifically helping the Lyme community now with my business that I just opened in February. It's called Lyme Warriors, and you can find me at LymeWarriors.com. I am providing my services as a health consultant, and also I am a certified brain spotting practitioner. I learned about brain spotting when I was at a counseling internship by a guy who has his PhD in psychology. And he said, Sammy, I have been having a revolving door of clients. People are coming in. I've been doing talk therapy for like 20 years. And the difference about what happens in talk therapy versus brain spotting is when we are talking, we're using our frontal cortex, which is right where our forehead is. And we're doing planning, executive functioning, organizing. And when you and I are talking right now, that's where you and I are processing from. When I do this limbic system work with clients, I provide brain spotting, and that happens within where the regulation parts of the brains are of the brain. So we have the amygdala, the hippocampus, and we're able to process out trauma with these clients. So I've been trained in brain spotting for about 2.5 years, and I had to do some reflections on where do I want my future to go. And I decided, you know, do I want to just leave Lyme disease in the past and move forward? Or do I have something and an education and a passion and an inspiration about me that I can really truly help this community? And I decided to stick on that path. And that's what has been bringing me so much joy. I have multiple clients right now. I can take clients globally in the US. I also have a client in Canada right now. And I'm offering free nervous system regulation groups to help people. And then I'm also doing the one-on-one health consulting and one-on-one brain spotting so that we can get more rapid, effective, and the beautiful part is lasting change within the brain.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. And I think that when you just were trying to tell yourself, what do you want to do? When you spoke those words out loud, you probably knew right away. Like, I think that when you go through this journey, you either have this passion for it or you don't. And, you know, I've been educating and advocating in the Lyme community for probably the past 7 years. And it's truly, truly what fills my heart and soul with joy. Because if I know I played a role in helping one person get through this journey a little bit easier than the struggle I had, it's so worth it. It's so worth it. And that's why this podcast is just so great, because we're just offering our stories. You know, it's just from our heart, sharing our journeys, but it's giving that hope and inspiration to those listeners that they need right now so desperately. So yay you. So in the title of your episode, we're going to make sure that we put your website in there so people can reach out to you and find you. And Sammy, what a journey. It's been fun listening to your form of hyperthermia that you went through, because like I said, I don't hear that from many people. So super grateful that you're doing what you're doing extremely thankful that you joined me and shared your journey with us. And it's going to make a huge impact on somebody out there that's listening to this. So I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tanya. And thank you for all the work you're doing. And also, just like you said, you've been showing up for the community in the ways that you have been. And even if you can help one person, I love that that motivates you. And what motivates me is a quote from Maya Angelou. And she says, people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel. And knowing how it was to receive from the end of the doctor conversation of, oh, we're going to blame this on mental health and not help you. That's just not true. There's people out there that can help us. There's people out there that will help us. And it might be a battle finding who is that person and what will that look like? What will that journey be? But there are people, and I don't want people to ever give up on that.
Perfect. You said it. And I love that quote too, because it's so true. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. If you would like to help me get your voice heard and spread this podcast, please go to the Patreon link in the description, and any donation is welcome, just simply to help cover the studio costs.